You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. With all the stresses of life, it can be easy to lose perspective on what really matters. But Heineken believes that life is about being with friends and opening yourself to new experiences. Because when you live spontaneously and embrace the unexpected, it's a chance to create new stories and connections. You just have to open it. So enjoy a refreshingly cold, full-bodied Heineken Lager today. With its deep golden color, light fruity aroma, mild bitter taste, and a crisp, clean finish. Cheers. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. In 1970, a young high school dropout named Richard Branson founded the mail-order music retailer Virgin Records, soon expanding the company to include a brick-and-mortar store on London's Oxford Street and a record label that went on to become the biggest independent label in the world, with artists like the Sex Pistols and the Rolling Stones. Then, the record mogul, known for taking risks, founded Virgin Atlantic, which surprised critics and became a leading global airline, fueling a growing travel brand that includes Virgin Australia, Virgin America, Virgin Holidays, Virgin Limited Editions, Virgin Trains, Virgin Hotels, Virgin Galactic, and now soon Virgin Cruises. Unafraid to venture into new territory, the Virgin Group's diverse portfolio of companies range from fitness clubs to healthcare and banking to telecommunications. Indeed, Sir Richard Branson is the only person to have built $8 billion companies in eight different sectors. Not content to sit on his money, Branson is also a philanthropist whose nonprofit foundation, Virgin Unite, tackles tough social and environmental problems, and he's a record-breaking adventurer whose feat includes the fastest-ever Atlantic Ocean crossing, a series of hot air balloon adventures, and kite surfing across the English Channel. With a life like that, it's hardly surprising that one autobiography just isn't enough for Sir Richard Branson. So now, 20 years after his iconic memoir, Losing My Virginity, the world's ultimate entrepreneur is back with the rest of the story in his latest book, Finding My Virginity, an intimate look at his never-ending quest to push boundaries, break rules, and seek new frontiers. And today, Sir Richard Branson joins me on the podcast to talk about the Virgin philosophy, why he believes faster is better when launching a new business, and why many of his ventures are still born out of his own personal desires, including starting Virgin Atlantic after getting bumped off a flight by another carrier. He gives advice to young entrepreneurs and shares what he's learned from his ventures that didn't quite take off. He reveals his reasons for selling Virgin America to Alaska Air and suggests that it may not be the last that the U.S. airline industry has seen of Richard Branson. He also outlines his vision of the future with his commercial space company, Virgin Galactic, and his newest company, Virgin Hyperloop One. Plus, he talks about Brexit, his strange lunch with Donald Trump, his most harrowing adventures, and his habit of chopping off people's neckties, including my own. Coming up with Sir Richard Branson in just a moment.
We'll be right back.
Thank you very much for reading it.
I
can normally tell when I'm doing an interview with someone whether they're bullshitting and or they'd actually read the book. I'll let you know at the end of the interview what I think. Let me just see how damaged the.
It's not that damaged, but I usually do the e-books because I can highlight them.
No, he hasn't read it.
Well, today I'm talking with the founder of the Virgin Group, billionaire, entrepreneur, activist, and adventurer, Sir Richard Branson. He's recently followed up his best-selling biography, Losing My Virginity, with a sequel chronicling the last two decades of adventures and accomplishments. It's titled Finding My Virginity. Richard, thanks for coming on the podcast.
A pleasure, as always.
Well, just look at you. You're so cool and relaxed. You know, it must bug a lot of people to see a guy who runs this multi-billion dollar company, and yet you're so relaxed. It's like no big thing. Do you ever get stressed? Do your nerves get to you?
I'm sorry about this, but you are going to have to cut your tie off before we get going. So
Okay.
Here we go. He doesn't look relaxed enough. He's a chilled guy, but he's, I'm afraid.
Do you need scissors?
No, that's it. You've got to
cut.
Here we go.
Oh, okay. You come all set. All right. I knew that was going to. I don't dress this fancy on a Sunday to begin with. So I knew that it was just going to drive you crazy looking at the tie around my neck.
No, well, if I wasn't looking at your tie, I'd be looking at your girlfriend. So you're.
Okay, fair enough.
Right. What was your question now? We've moved on to ties.
I don't understand why
business should be any different from home life, basically. Mm-hmm. I think why should you be able to be relaxed at home, dress as you feel comfortable, and then when you go to business, suddenly you've got to be stuffy and boring. It doesn't make sense to me. So we try with people who work for Virgin to make sure they can dress as they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
They can work from home if they want to work from home. They can work from work.
Really?
They can take more time off without any questions being asked if they want to. I mean, just try to treat people as adults, and that's our approach to life.
Is the nonchalance an illusion? Do you ever get stressed out? Do your nerves ever get to you when dealing with such a huge company?
I don't ever lose my cool because I think that's counterproductive. And I think it reflects badly on you and it obviously hurts other people.
Mm-hmm.
I love life. I love people. And I'm lucky I can sort of surround myself with a wonderful group of people who are determined to achieve great things. And over the last 50 years between them all, some wonderful things have been achieved.
You know, a lot of people would probably say you should be stressed because you're known as a risk taker and you're known for taking on what others might consider risky ventures. How do you hedge your risks?
I do protect against the downside as best I can. Mm-hmm. So I've done a lot of adventures in my lifetime. I suspect with those, I should have protected against the downside slightly more. At the end of the book, I talk about my 75 lives and how I came quite close. If I'm climbing a mountain or whatever, I do try to make sure that the downside is protected.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to business risks, I have no wish to have wasted 50 years of my life building businesses. So I very much protect the downside in mm-hmm. every new venture we do. I suppose the most famous way of protecting the downside at Virgin was when we moved from the record business into the airline business. And we had one secondhand 747, and I insisted on doing a deal with Boeing, whereby if the airline didn't work out, I could hand the plane back at the end of the first 12 months. And in that way, I knew that I could afford for the airline to fail without destroying our record company.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, because I've always heard that when you started Virgin Atlantic, you basically started it because you got bumped off of a commercial flight yourself. Is that true?
Yes, I got bumped off. I was wanting to get to see a beautiful lady in the Virgin Islands, and so I went to the back of the airport, rented a plane, and borrowed a blackboard and, as a joke, wrote Virgin Airlines one way, $39, and build my first plane with all the people who'd been bumped. And then the next day I rang up Boeing and asked if they had any secondhand 747s for sale.
Well, in the book, you talk about your reluctance to sell your companies, even when there's a fantastic offer on the table. You recently sold Virgin America to Alaska. What was your arithmetic behind that decision?
Well, the book has a whole chapter on the sale of Virgin America. It was a sad day. When I set up Virgin America, the authorities insisted that I had non-voting shares because I was British and not American. And the people who had the voting shares were venture capital funds, and they were facing a very, very big return on their money invested. So they decided to sell, and you know, we all made lots of money out of it, but that's not anywhere near as exciting as being the fifth airline in America and getting out there and becoming you know, the major force in America that I think Virgin America was heading to become. And you know, Virgin America won the best airline awards for the last 12 mm-hmm. years, and I think it would have continued. They're great staff, great team of people. But anyway, these things happen, and we've picked ourselves up, and you have to, all I'll say is watch this space. You may not have seen the end of us in the airline business in America.
Did you ever feel that you were able to get a sufficient foothold in the U.S. market?
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. Virgin America had a really, really good foothold, a really good niche. It was just so much better than everybody else. We still have Virgin Atlantic flying from most of the major American cities to Europe. And that's, you know, our baby that's been going for 35 years. But yeah, one day I'd love to come back in. And as I say, we'll see where we go on that one.
Well, I want to give you credit with this book because, unlike a lot of business books, it doesn't just discuss the risks that paid off. You talk about the ones that didn't, like Virgin Cola, Virgin Cosmetics, Virgin Cars, Virgin Brides, even. What have you learned from all those experiences? I assume you learned as much from failures.
A book would be thoroughly boring if it was just one big success story. Mm-hmm. I think you need, you know, my first book, somebody wrote about it and said it's like a kiss and tell story with warts and all told by the author. And this book, obviously, with all the trials and tribulations of our space program, you know, we've had 12 years of building that, and mm-hmm. I think, you know, makes for a really good read. We've had a lot of successes. We've had some failures, just like the ones you mentioned. Fortunately, we cut things out pretty quickly, so we try things like mm-hmm. you know, Virgin Brides. We didn't find any Virgin Brides, so we knocked it on the head pretty quickly. And I think what we learned was just make sure that anything you do is by far and away the best in the best in the field. Don't do anything average. Mm-hmm. And where we've created the best, we've always succeeded, and that's what we're continuing to do now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the speed with which you start up these companies and how most people in business think it takes about a year to get a company up and running. You like to move much faster than that. Is the attitude, if there's a chance we're going to make mistakes, let's get them over with quickly then and either move on or it takes flight.
It's always difficult to knock something on the head, but mm-hmm. it's much better to do it quickly so that it doesn't end up damaging the other companies you've already mm. set mm. up. But I mean, I just like to try things. I mean, like, you know, with Virgin Atlantic, our first airline, we literally tried with one secondhand 747. If people hadn't liked it, we would have knocked it on the head. As it was, we've now got three airlines, 300 planes around the world, and it went from one plane to 300. So trying things out is a good idea.
you were disrupting industries before anyone even used the term disruptor, particularly with the Virgin Atlantic taking on BA in one of probably your most public David versus Goliath battles. Is that the victory that you relish the most?
I talk about a number of similar victories in the book. British Airways tried to drive us out of business, and we took them to court, and we won the biggest libel damages in history. And it happened to be Christmas time, and we just distributed them to all our staff equally at Christmas, and it became known as the British Airways Christmas bonus. And it was a really, really happy moment for us all. There was another story I tell in the book when there was a new managing director of T-Mobile, which is a mobile phone company in the UK. And this man, we had a joint venture with him, and he decided to try to invoke a clause in one of our contracts, which would have given him that 100% of the shares for £1, shares that were worth over a billion pounds. And we took him to court, and the judge was so angry with him that he handed all their shares to us for £1. So we walked away with £500 million pounds worth of profit as a result of that court case. And that definitely put a big smile on our face too.
Now, do you ever worry as the head of a multi-billion-dollar company that one day Virgin may be seen as the Goliath to some young upstart David?
Well, I think fortunately Virgin is made up of lots of little companies, and each of those companies are the competitor company in their field. So Virgin Atlantic is still the competitor company to British Airways. Virgin Galactic. I mean, maybe some people could argue that we don't have any. We've still got Elon Musk. He's a big competitor.
Competition.
And Jeff Bezos. He's pretty big. So no, but I think by and large, we are more the David rather than the Goliath in most fields we're in.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Sir Richard Branson when we come back in just a moment. Life can be stressful, and sometimes we lose perspective on what really matters. As we rush to achieve all the things we want in life, it can be easy to forget to enjoy the smaller moments along the way. But life isn't about following a common path or having a set plan. It's about being with friends, celebrating with loved ones, and living in the moment. Heineken believes that you create the richest memories when you embrace the unexpected and open yourself to new experiences. That's why Heineken encourages everyone to live spontaneously. Because when you embrace the unexpected, things like exploring new parties, enjoying the summertime, watching exciting soccer matches, and celebrating the holidays with your family, all become chances to create new stories and connections. You just have to open it up. So enjoy a refreshingly cold, full-bodied Heineken Lager today. With its deep golden color, light fruity aroma, mild bitter taste, and a crisp, clean finish. Cheers! Today I want to tell you about a new podcast you'll enjoy. It's called I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics. Political conversations are often tense, especially when they're with someone you care about. So if you're tired of unfriending your relatives on Facebook and you're already dreading seeing everyone for Thanksgiving, this show can help. On I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics, therapist Jeannie Safer uses her expertise to help couples and friends who care about each other but just can't see eye to eye on political issues. In the first episode, CNN political commentators Margaret Hoover and John Avlon share how Sarah Palin nearly broke up their marriage and how they were able to stick it out. Hear Dr. Safer help guests like Margaret and John on I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics. Just search for I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics wherever you listen to podcasts and hit subscribe. And now, back to the podcast. As part of your desire to pay it forward to the next generation of disruptors, you seem to be spending a lot of time and money encouraging entrepreneurs and startups. What advice do you usually give to them?
I think the best bit of advice I can give is learn the art of delegation. Don't try to do it all yourself or you'll burn out. And Find somebody who's better than yourself to run your business on a day-to-day basis. And then you can get, you know, look at the bigger picture. You can make sure that you look after yourself, make sure you spend time with your family. I think, you know, if I just had one bit of advice, learn to delegate.
Well, I mean, that must be key to it because you have such a diverse portfolio of companies within the Virgin Group. I can't imagine that it's very easy for you to be a micromanager.
I like to know what's going on, mm-hmm. but equally, I like to delegate almost mm-hmm. completely so that, and not to second guess people. If people make mistakes, mm-hmm. let them make a mistake. If people make good things, let them make a good thing. And that frees me up to, when there's a crisis, like, the Caribbean's been wiped out by a hurricane. I can fly to Washington and see the World Bank and see the IMF and try to raise money to try to get the Caribbean back on its feet again. So I try to keep my day-to-day everything clear mm-hmm. so that when there's big issues to be dealt with, I can deal with them.
When you have such a diverse portfolio of companies in disparate sectors, how do they all fit into the Virgin brand? Is there a Virgin philosophy that binds these different ventures?
Yeah, I think Virgin stands for fun. It stands for offering great value for money. It stands for quality. It stands for real happy workforce. I think anybody who came across a new Virgin company would know that we're not going to let them down, and they will give us a try. And, I very, very, very rarely find anybody who's disappointed.
We were just talking about the origins of Virgin Atlantic, and it seems to me like it's a pattern that we see over and over again with you, whether you're talking about opening Virgin Records because the big labels aren't putting out bands that you like, or whether you're starting Virgin Mobile because you have the largest monthly cellular bill in the UK. How many of your ideas still come from your own personal frustrations or desires as a consumer yourself?
I think most of them, actually. Mm-hmm. I think... we're going into the cruise ship business with Virgin Voyages because, I just don't fancy the idea of going on, the big cruise ships that currently exist and the banquets and just the way they do it. So let's create the kind of cruise ship company that myself and my friends would like to go on. Let's create the kind of hotels. We're just, opening one here in San Francisco in 3 months' time. Our first one was in Chicago. It's been, wonderfully received. Let's create the kind of hotels that we would like to stay in. If we're going to create a space line, let's make sure that, people can, why do people want to go to space? They want to look back on the Earth. So make sure that we have big windows and beautiful, sexy spaceships and wonderful, wonderful, good-looking space forts and just getting all these details right.
Mm-hmm. And your latest venture is just a few days ago, you announced that you were making an investment in Hyperloop One, renaming it Virgin Hyperloop One. What's your plan for Hyperloop?
Virgin Hyperloop can transport people in a tunnel at incredible speeds. I mean, you could go up to 1,000 miles an hour, but
wow.
If it was a straight line. But you can comfortably go sort of 600, 650 miles an hour, even with corners. And there are a lot of places in the world that where people would love to, jump on a train that goes at those sort of speeds rather than go all the way out to an airport. Mm-hmm. By the time people reach the airport, they would have actually reached their destination by jumping on the train in the middle of the city. So there are plenty of places in the world that have expressed interest in getting a Virgin Hyperloop, and the wonderful team in outside Las Vegas are the test program's going great. So I think in the next sort of 2 or 3 years, we should start building.
You're not worried at all about cannibalizing your air business?
Most of our air business is long haul. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Virgin Atlantic is, you know, across the Atlantic and you know, flying long flights to the Far East. So, you know, maybe that's one advantage of Virgin America having been sold. So.
Now, did you have a conversation with Elon Musk before getting into Hyperloop?
Not as such, but we're friends. We've been friends for many years. The Hyperloop name, he's said, you know, anybody can use. I think it was his idea for the name. The technology's been around for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I think, you know, next week we may be announcing our own unique name. So watch this space.
Okay. Now, do you have any concerns that he may change his mind about taking a personal stake in the Hyperloop and create competition?
Oh, it's quite likely he'll start a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Hyperloop One is ahead of the game. We've been working on it the longest. But competition is, as they say, always good, and it'll sharpen everybody's pencil.
You think there's enough room in that sector then?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there's a lot of places in the world that can benefit from high-speed train travel.
And of course, that's not the only area where you and Elon's paths have crossed. Virgin Galactic and SpaceX have established themselves as the dominant players in the private space race. Does the Virgin Galactic vision of commercial spaceflight differ from that of SpaceX?
Yes, I think Elon's dream is Mars, and that's his complete fixation almost. I mean, any time you meet him, that's all he talks about. Our aim is to try to improve lives for people back here on Earth. So, so at Virgin Galactic, we're putting, you know, with OneWeb, this massive big array of satellites around the Earth, which will connect many people who are not connected. You know, we will try to make it affordable for as many people as possible to go to space. Only less than 500 people have been to space in the history of space travel. We hope to be able to do that pretty well every year. We hope to be able to use our technology. I mean, we're the only people building a spacecraft rather than a giant rocket.
Mm-hmm.
So people can go up and travel in a spaceship and then come back and land again. That makes it easier for us to develop point-to-point air travel. So I think all in all, we are, we're both doing different sectors and are compatible with each other.
Yeah, and I think it shows how ambitious you are that when you registered Virgin Galactic, you also registered Virgin Intergalactic on the same day, right?
I'm always shooting for the stars. The sky is not the limit.
Well, the estimates for the first Virgin Galactic flight have been pushed back a number of times. As you said earlier, you like to start companies fast, but I think you've exercised a rational degree of caution with Virgin Galactic. What's the estimated launch date at this point?
I would hope that we're in space very early next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope that I'm in space before the middle of next year, and I hope that we'd have people into space before the end of next year. But that's what I'm hoping. I'm not going to, we'll wait and let the test pilots test the craft time and time again, and only go up when we're absolutely sure it's okay.
Yeah, I'm in no rush. You do what you have to do. I have to ask about Donald Trump. In Finding My Virginity, you talk about your first encounter with him. Didn't he basically just invite you over to lunch to have a bitch session about all of his enemies?
Yeah, I think he did. It was a strange lunch. I walked out wondering why he'd invited me. And I think it makes a good chapter in the book. My dealings with Donald Trump, I think, are quite revealing.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stop him becoming president.
So he invited you to lunch without any particular purpose to it or any proposal at the end of the lunch?
Nope, none whatsoever. He just wanted to tell me about five people who had crossed him when he was last bankrupt, who wouldn't give him any money, and how he was committed to spend his life's mission was to go out and destroy these people. I mean, it was very strange.
Yeah, and he later wrote you this typical nasty Trump letter, you know, kind of attempting to belittle your achievements and even saying he doesn't even believe that you're a real billionaire. But from everything I know about you, it seems to me like you're not the kind of guy who measures his worth or his happiness in his status as a billionaire. I imagine that's pretty low on the list probably for you, actually.
I think it should be very low on anybody's list. I think, when you read your obituary one day, if your obituary says, such and such was worth X amount of dollars when he died, that's a pretty unexciting obituary. If you read an obituary about your life, well, you're not going to read it, but if your children read an obituary about your life and it talks about what you've achieved in your life and the difference you've made to other people, that's worth reading.
Yeah, what was it Andrew Carnegie said? The man who dies rich dies disgraced. So you're spending a lot of time and money on charitable ventures and philanthropy, like the elders and whatnot.
Yeah, I think most of my time is now spent on trying to make a difference in this world, trying to use the position I find myself to be able to pick up the phone to pretty well anybody, maybe except for the White House, and get through and get things done. I think if you get yourself into that position, you really owe it to the world to do everything you can to make a difference. And so we've set up organizations like the Elders to, with Nelson Mandela and Gresham Machel, his wife, and a wonderful group of people, President Carter, Mary Robinson, Kofi Annan, and so on, to go into conflict regions and try to resolve conflicts.
When you've tried to do that, has it been well received when you sort of parachute into some country and try to resolve it?
By and large, yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there are some countries that are, who would rather, if they're dictatorships or something, they would rather not have the elders arrive.
Right.
when Kenya was falling apart after an election that was a bit fraudulent, Kofi Annan and Archbishop Tutu and Gresham Machel went there and knocked heads together. A coalition government was formed and it avoided, I think, a really bloody civil war. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You were also very vocal against Brexit, and you've said more recently that you're skeptical that it'll ever actually happen. Why is that?
Well, what I actually said was I'm worried that it may happen, but if it does happen, I think within a few years, because the vast majority of young people don't want it to happen, as young people get older and older people die out, I think it will be reversed. Brexit's going to do a lot of harm to Great Britain. It's going to do a lot of harm to Europe. And I think young people realize that. They want to be able to live in 28 countries. They want to be able to work in 28 countries. They don't want to be restricted to one country. So I think there will be an election sometime in the not too distant future which will reverse it.
Now, you spend, I think, a maximum of 90 days in the UK. You spend, I guess, the majority of your time on Necker Island. Do you still consider the UK to be a business-friendly environment?
I think Brexit has definitely done a lot of damage to the UK. I mean, it's gone from being number one in gross national product growth to bottom of the league in Europe since Brexit was announced, and I think it will get worse.
Mm-hmm. President Obama spent, about a week or two on your island, Necker Island, right after, I think, they left the White House. Did he and Michelle seem pretty happy in their post-presidency?
Very happy. I mean, I think, obviously worried about what was going to happen in the White House because they literally arrived the day after Trump took over. But they were determined not to let it worry them and determined to have a good holiday, which they hadn't had in 8 years. So they let their hair down and President Obama learned to kite surf and had a great time.
Now, before we go, you've had a number of harrowing adventures in all manner of contraptions. What do you think is the closest shave you've ever had?
Oh, dearie me. Well, in my book, I talk about my 75 close misses and 75 lives, everything from ballooning to microlights to parachute jumps to, a parachute jump where I got rid of the parachute instead of opening the parachute, skydiving attempt, and I got the Wally of the Decade award for that. Anyway, you have to read the book to find out.
Oh, okay.
So got to have one plug for finding my virginity.
Absolutely. Now, what's your next adventure? What do you think that'll be? Space?
Oh, space, yeah. Yeah. We'll be up and away sometime next year.
Well, again, the book is called Finding My Virginity. Richard, it's been fun. Thanks for talking with me.
Pleasure to talk to you. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Thanks again to Sir Richard Branson for joining me on the podcast. Order his new book, Finding My Virginity, on Amazon or download the audiobook at audible.com. Keep up with Richard Branson at virgin.com or on Twitter at Richard Branson. You deserve a better email marketing platform, and unlike other email providers, Emma puts its customers first. It's powerful email marketing with a personal touch. Their award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more, so you'll have everything you need to do your best email marketing yet. Request a customized demo of Emma's email marketing platform today at myemma.com. Again, that's myemma.com. Also, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. And please take a moment to take our listener survey at podsurvey.com/kick so we can get to know who's listening, and it's also helpful with our advertisers. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.